Hello, and welcome to the Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane, and for promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America. In this episode of the Fast Fill, we'll share another session from NGV21, our annual meeting and industry summit held recently in Phoenix, Arizona. At our multi-day summit start, we were joined by Sempra Energy's Vice President of Sustainability, Sharon Tompkins, for a keynote discussion on the global energy transition. Ms. Tompkins leads Sempra Energy's Environmental, Social, and Governance, or ESG, efforts to create long-term sustainable value across stakeholder groups. Our conversation focused on how maintaining affordability, energy resilience, and energy access are key to the inclusive transition to a net zero global economy. Here it is now. In developing our program, we sort of decided to have sort of two theme threads. And today's is based on sustainability. Tomorrow's will be focused, I think, a little bit more on technology and some of the technology developments. So I thought it was real important today that we sort of level set our morning conversation with what does that mean to be sustainable in this day and age? And we're fortunate to have Sempra Energy's Vice President of Sustainability, Sharon Tompkins, here with us. Thank you very, very much for being here. And we thought it'd just be more interesting, as opposed to a presentation, just to have sort of a conversation. And we hear an awful lot today about ESG and ESG efforts and what investment strategies are, and thought it would be really interesting to bring the Chief Sustainability Officer from an investor-owned utility, in fact, the largest investor-owned utility in the United States, from a territory perspective and customer perspective, here to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that Sempra as a utility faces on that front. And I think Sharon and I were just talking in the back of the room. She's in a unique position because she's one of us, but she's also someone that we are also pitching at the same time, right? So it's a unique perspective that we have. A lot of folks in the room, we talk about how do we go after new business and who are those individuals that we're talking to. A lot of them have sustainability now in their title. So let me just give you a quick introduction to Sharon. She, as I said, is the Vice President of Sustainability for Sempra. She previously served as the Vice President of Strategy, Engagement, and was the Chief Environmental Officer for the Southern California Gas Company, SoCal Gas. In that role, she led their energy policy and strategy. She has extensive background in issues related to balanced energy, energy choice, affordability, and reliability. She has served as SoCal Gas's general counsel and regulatory assistant general counsel. And before joining SoCal Gas, she worked to build and the founding member of a firm's energy, natural resources, and environmental practices area. So she represented clients in a variety of different litigation, regulatory, and appellate proceedings. She has a degree from Penn State University and a law degree from the USC Gold School of Law. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, so we chat in the back, but tell the group a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are, and I'm always interested in how folks got their start in the utility field.
Okay, so I'm going to start, since it's almost Halloween, I think it's my dad's revenge. When I was in high school, my dad was an energy nerd and handed out, I kid you not, comic books, energy comic books and raisins. I'm surprised our house wasn't egged. But
now, you said your dad was a professor at
University of Idaho. He was a professor in engineering, okay. but led an energy effort with Robert Redford out of the University of Idaho and Wazoo. When I was a kid, no, I didn't actually get to meet Robert Redford. I was too young. But nevertheless, I think it's my dad's revenge. So that's the long story. The short story is I started practicing energy law during the energy crisis.
Okay.
And after I had been a partner for about 5 years, moved over to SoCal Gas and really advanced the regulatory strategy and then ultimately general counsel for about 4 years, and then was asked to move to the business side and really got an opportunity to think about how does an energy system need to work and what is the role of natural gas in that, in a net zero economy, and really thinking about it more broadly. And then about a year ago, I was asked to take on a new role at Sempra, which was Vice President of Sustainability, and sort of really take our ESG efforts to that next level.
I did a little research on Sempra just to be prepared for this morning, and I think I mentioned it a second ago, but I found a fact, every day more Americans receive their natural gas or electricity from Sempra than any other company in the United States. So tell us a little bit about that approach. Now you have that new perspective. And I said to Sharon, and I were talking last night about our kids, and they were just talking in the back, and I made an analogy. You know, who's your favorite kid at Sempra? And you had a good response to that.
I have no favorites. and that's certainly what I tell my four kids. But I think, so Sempra is an energy infrastructure company. We're in the transmission and distribution system primarily, whether that's on the gas or the electric side. And we're in two major markets in North America. Texas and California is where our largest footprints are. So we have Oncor, we have five operating companies ultimately on the gas and electric. Two of them in California, so SDG&E and SoCalGas are probably the most familiar to the folks here. But we also have Oncor, we have LNG. And I like to think about it as we're delivering the energy, we're agnostic as to what flows through that. So on the electric side, that renewables, we're agnostic, with the exception of we see it's really important to get to net zero by mid-century. But we're agnostic because we're not in the renewables business. We're not in the commodity side. And that's true also on the gas side. So SoCalGas is delivering cleaner and cleaner molecules as we go. But to your point, you know, we've got a lot of customers out there that depend on us every day to turn on the lights, to heat their homes. And we need to make sure that that happens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And it's affordable, it's reliable, and it's resilient. We also have a global footprint, so we have an LNG facilities. And I think what people don't understand when you think about the world is in the next, by 2050, we're going to have 2 billion more people on this earth. And most of those are in developing economies. They don't have what we take for granted, which is sitting in this room having perfectly climate-controlled
environments.
We've got the lights. We have all of that. They're looking for reliable energy systems. And so we're going to have to deliver on that so that they can get to where we are while we advance a net zero economy. And that's a pretty big challenge.
Well, and you know, you mentioned taking things for granted. We hear an awful lot about environmental justice, but I'm reading more and more about, and we were talking about some books in the back, about energy poverty, right? And so access not just to clean energy, but access to energy at all. And so I'm wondering, and you mentioned sort of the challenge that you have. Do you think policymakers in California truly understand and can comprehend the responsibility that you as a utility have every day to keep those lights on, and the challenges and the different pulls from affordability, reliability, resiliency, do they get it?
I think there's a challenge in really thinking. We're sitting here today, and I think a lot of times we're looking at today's solutions and working our way out. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of policymakers are thinking about the systems that way. And we really have very siloed systems. We have the electric system. We have the gas system. They work together, but they're not as interdependent as they're going to need to be. So we're going to need clean fuels. We're going to need clean electrons. They're going to be interchangeable so we can deliver energy where and how we need it. if we're really going to get to a 2050 system. But I think fundamentally, when I think about how we should be thinking, and I've used think 14 times in that sentence, about an, what we need to do to deliver that 2050 system is we really need to think about that 2050 energy system. And that 2050 energy system isn't just about decarbonization. It's about affordability, reliability, resiliency, and globally access. And if we don't keep those as the North Star, we're going to fail. And I think you're actually seeing that today right. in Europe, where the energy prices for heating the homes, for fueling the vehicles, that's increasing. And that fundamentally, people feel that in their pocketbooks. And if we don't make sure that people can continue to pay for their energy systems and for their transportation, or for the products that get delivered to them, we ultimately fail.
Mm-hmm. Now, you at your team have developed, and I want to make sure I have the right, four key pillars, right? So we talked, you just mentioned that. Policymakers, we've seen for far too long, I think, they've made a commitment and then looked to everyone else to figure it out. You at your team, you went in and said, we've got four key pillars to deliver on for key sustainability goals. What are they?
Well, ESG is three acronyms, and I think everybody thinks about the E, right?
Right.
So that's the environmental component. But then there's social and governance. And we did what's called a materiality assessment to see what are the key drivers for Sempra to create long-term sustainable value. And there are four pillars associated with that. So one is enabling the energy transition, providing resilient energy, championing people, and then achieving world-class safety. Because fundamentally, if you're in the electron molecule business, if you don't deliver it safely, we all know what happens. And so that's the core concept that overruns everything that we do.
And one of your pillars I noticed was championing people. I thought that was interesting. And I've often said, and Allison and Chris and I have used this on the Hill in meetings, is that if climate change is cumulative and we have to act now, we all have to have an ability to be part of that and respond to that. And so it can't be one or the other, it has to be all. So, you know, you're customer focused. You've got to deliver those molecules, that energy every day. How do you balance what those needs are with what your ESG, you have a lot of stakeholders to please on a daily basis. How do you balance all of that? Investors, customers, ratepayers.
Well, I'm going to go with one of our core principles, or values, which is to do the right thing. And doing the right thing is figuring out how to deliver that energy system of 2050 in a way that meets our customer needs. And that's really combining the E and the S. And I'll just reiterate that affordability, resiliency, and reliability are the North Star. Okay. And if you keep those in mind and you deliver on the lower carbon, it's complicated. And that's where I think the U.S. needs to advance beyond the conversations and start really moving fundamentally to achieving the infrastructure that's needed to create that net zero energy system. But you've got to keep those in mind. The E and the S have to go together. Governance is really about making sure that you have all of the structures within a company to achieve those two things and to achieve what you say you're going to do.
We as an organization earlier this year announced our own climate statement. We put out a climate statement. The board passed with our own goals that we will be 80% fully renewable natural gas dispensed through our systems by 2030 and 100% by 2050. California is already close to that. Sempra made an announcement or a goal or a projection that you'll be 100% neutral by 2050. You think you'll get there?
I strongly believe we have the path to get there. It's going to be complicated. It's going to be all of us working together. stopping not necessarily the debate, but really stopping the nitpicking at the various different solutions. And I'll use hydrogen and the 50 shades of hydrogen that exist right now. It's really about creating clean molecules and clean electrons, right? If you just think about it that way, it really doesn't matter what it is and what it takes to get to those clean, assuming we keep the North Star in mind, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a lot of different solutions. And if we keep fighting about it has to be this color, it has to be that color, we can't have natural gas, we have to get rid of it today, it can't be renewable natural gas, it has to be wind and solar, batteries. Frankly, it's going to take all of those solutions, and I think we have the building blocks to get there. And we have at Sempra an investment thesis across what we call the 3Ds, which are diversification, digitalization, and decarbonization. And we believe that our investment in infrastructures in those three buckets will enable us to do our part to get to net zero. And when we talk about net zero, we're talking about net zero across what are called all three scopes in the ESG world. And before I got into this role, I had no idea what those were. But basically what it is that there's your operational emissions, and then there's your value chain emissions. And this year we decided, because our biggest footprint is in the value chain, in that what's called scope three, that we were going to commit to being net zero across all of those scopes because of our footprint. We can help to influence the overall value chain. And that includes what are known as avoided emissions. So RNG is a primary example of that. Rather than taking dairy waste going into the atmosphere, capturing, leveraging it, and using it, and figuring out how to use the waste streams.
I want to talk a little bit, if we can, about some of the private investment that Sempra's made, specifically in this effort to electrify everything, challenges with battery storage. But I'm always reminded, there's a great saying in Washington, it was Senator Everett Dirksen, and he made a comment about federal spending, $1 billion here, $1 billion there, and pretty soon you're talking real money. You have a lot of mandates, especially in your home territory in California, pressure from investors. We know it's the right thing to do for the planet. Is it the right business decision for your investors?
It's the right business decision because, again, if you think about our various different stakeholders, so start with the customer. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to do to figure out how to create that net zero energy system. Because at the end of the day, we'll be advancing something that society needs. So if you start with them as a key stakeholder. And then the investment, and one of the speakers earlier today really talked about the movement in the investment pool and where your capital dollars flow. And the investors are really asking, what are you doing as a company to advance sustainability? And sustainability is really that long-term value across all stakeholders. That's really the key definition to sustainability. And ES and G are just ways to help you measure that. And so you're talking to investors about what you are doing on the E and the S front to create that long-term sustainable value. And that includes having a thriving business at the end of it. It's about advancing societal interests. It's about advancing environmental goals. But it's also about advancing the business itself. So how do you create the investments and the strategies that allow you to get not only satisfying your environmental objectives and your sustainable objectives, but also that you're delivering to the investor on that monetary perspective? And again, the G is just the credibility that when you say you're going to do X, you're going to do X, and you're going to do everything in your power to do X, and you're going to be transparent if you can't, and you failed, and you don't meet it.
The benefit you have working on the investor side is they'll take a deep dive. We were talking about this last night, I think, and just before we came up, about what our kids are seeing and what are hearing and this fear. We talked about John Kerry and his pronouncement back in March that we have 9 years to act. So the public perspective is you're probably not doing enough. How do you balance all of that, that quick need? And what? How do we share with our kids that it's not an all-in in the next 2-3 years or else we evaporate?
Well, I think I do actually worry about our kids a little bit because I think they're very afraid of what the earth will look like in 50 years. And my husband's a high school teacher. And if you know my background, I'm an English major, but my husband says I'm a science nerd. So if you think about climate change, we are going to see changes in the climate. But we're not going to lose the atmosphere. We're not going to have some places will be drier, some places will be wetter, but fundamentally, the earth will be fine. It's a question of what impacts it has on us and what impacts we have on it, as well as just fundamentally, what are the different species that may be impacted by the climate changing. So I think it's important that kids understand that, yes, we need to work really hard to get to net zero, but the earth is not going to come to an end. But we need to figure out how to work within the system and not have as big a footprint as we do, and how do we leverage our ingenuity to really help to create a much more sustainable planet in all facets. So the circular economy is a big way. We are, you know, incredibly wasteful. That's one of the things I do love about RNG is really capturing and leveraging our waste streams in a meaningful way.
Yeah. We called it waste reimagined, or taking, you know, an energy problem or a waste problem and creating a green energy asset. It's been a great story. I want to open it up to a question or two from the audience, if that's okay. Jeff, do you want to grab a mic? And anyone have a question here for Sharon as we wrap up? Someone has to. Yes.
We are considered a leader in sustainability. We're on our 13th sustainability report, and we do quite well on the ESG ratings and rankings. And I think for two reasons: one, we have credibility in this space. So because our roots and our DNA is in California utilities, we've been advancing decarbonization of the energy system for a very long time. And that's both on the gas side as well as on the electric side. Southern California Gas Company has remarkably advanced in reducing methane emissions from its system, innovating and creating new ways and different ways to really advance a tighter and more sustainable natural gas system. So we've got that credibility. We're also very transparent in how we report things. And one of my biggest jobs is to create a sustainability report every year. And part of that is not only delivering on the story, but really having the metrics behind it. One of the key challenges I have this year is we've set, as I said, that net zero goal. We're going to have to measure ourselves across all three scopes and be able to provide that to our stakeholders. And that's a key challenge, and that's actually a key challenge across all industries, because that scope three is complicated. And when you start to talk about an economy-wide net zero, it's taking, for example, RNG and delivering it as energy. That actually takes out more carbon potentially than it emits mm-hmm. at the burn tip. So how do you account for that?
Eddie's got a question.
Good morning, everyone. Hey, thank you, Sharon. Sharon, you mentioned something at the beginning of your talk that nobody really talks about when it comes to global warming. They always talk about emissions and this and that. But you talked about that 2 billion more inhabitants. What effect does that really have? You know, housing, you know, you said, you know, they need electricity. They need water, you know, to start off with. But just the basics, like what impact does that have on global warming? I never hear it in any of the, you know, we just don't hear about that. But, you know, 2 billion people is a lot of people. Just the body heat alone is going to be global warming.
It is a huge challenge. And it's one where the easy way for the energy systems to be created in those places in the world that are developing their economies and that are developing their energy systems, how do we advance where they are from our learning? So, for example, there are a lot of coal plants that are being built. Rather than building a coal plant to deliver that electricity, why not deliver renewable natural gas
LNG.
In the form of LNG? Ultimately, someday that may be delivered as hydrogen, like long term from now. But at a minimum, how do we create an electric system that is lower in carbon? And what we know from the United States is moving from coal to natural gas, we were able to see dramatic changes in our emissions in the United States just from that switch. And so if we can advance an electric system that is reliable, affordable, and resilient worldwide, that means having some sort of base load. You're going to have to start to think about what is the role of natural gas to do that. And we think LNG has a fundamental role to play in that. And frankly, if you talk to the experts, they agree that at the end of the day, natural gas is going to have to be a part of the long-term solution, particularly because you can't ask developing economies to stop developing. You can't tell people they can have what we take for granted today.
I was working on for a presentation last week with Manny for the Association of Energy Engineers in Southern California, invited by SoCalGas, so thank you. And I found a statistic that Hawaii itself is still 2/3 of Hawaii's electricity comes from coal and fuel oil. And yet it has a renewable energy mandate by 2045. I mean, even here in the United States, that's a huge, huge task before a state like Hawaii. So I want to thank you for joining us today and giving us a little insight into sustainability. I think it's been a great foundation as we continue to talk for the rest of the morning. Jeff Clark is up next to do a little sustainability analysis with some folks from Clean Energy Fuels. But please join me in a round of applause for Sharon Tompkins.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I hope that was okay.
Thank you to Sempra Energy's Vice President of Sustainability, Sharon Tompkins, for sharing her thoughts with us, and to you, our listeners, for tuning in. To find out more about our recent NGV21 program, go to our annual show's website at ngvshow.com. For more information on NGV America, visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There you can sign up for NGV America's weekly newsletter. Share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org. And be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Sharon Tompkins and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Fill. Until next time.